This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Bob Edwards. Quincy Jones has been making all kinds of music for more than 50 years. As a composer, arranger, or producer, Jones has worked with bebop to hip-hop, plus movie and television scores. He's also been a record label executive, magazine publisher, television and movie producer, though the business side didn't come easy for him. In his new autobiography, Jones recalls how in 1959 he led his big band on a tour of Europe and fell into enormous debt. Jones wouldn't dig out of it for several years. He was just 26 years old. He called on an old friend for help. Irving Green, then president of Mercury Records, offered him a job as a producer at Mercury.
In the beginning, I was not dealing with pop hits at all. I was recording Sarah Vaughan and Nina Simone, Roland Kirk, Dinah Washington, just a lot of musical albums that really fit my role as an arranger. And another man named Hal Mooney had the same thing. And the pop guys were saying behind our back that these guys are budget busters going out making all this great music with big orchestras, but we should be contributing to the bottom line. And so, like a challenge, Irving said, why don't you think about, I said, making pop music is not a big deal. He said, if it's not a big deal, let's get busy. And so I had to put my money where my mouth was. And we were at one meeting, and they had a demo of this little girl that had been submitted to Joe Glazer. And I caught it as it was being thrown back to Irving. And I liked it because she sang in tune, and she had a nice sound, a very identifiable sound. And that was the first pop record I made, was Leslie Gore, It's My Party.
How did you get into movie scores?
Well, I wanted to be a movie composer with a passion since I was 13 years old. I was in art first before music. And the visual side, the idea of reinforcing visuals with music was just always a real deep passion. I did The Pawnbroker first with Sidney Lumet, who was the one that led me by the hand into this incredible, my dream world, really. And it was a fantastic picture. And then I thought it was going to be easy from then on because I'd done one movie. And then finally I got a call from my agent, and he promised never to let me do B-movies. So he said, when I call, it's going to be a hot movie. And he, sure enough, he was right. The first movie was called Mirage with Gregory Peck and Walter Matthau.
My mirage, my mirage, are you not here?
And I went out there, only one problem is that the producer was not aware that I was black. And he saw me with my attaché case, my little Italian suits on and everything, and he says, I'll be right back. You know, we all know that look in the eye. You know it exactly. Your antenna turns on, you know what's up. So, okay, here we go. And he went in the other room. Fortunately, he called the wrong guy. He called Henry Mancini, who was like my brother. And he said, man, let's get into the 20th century. It'll be fine. He won't write the blues for Gregory Peck.
Although I'd love to hear that.
And that's what Gregory said. He said, that's not a bad idea. Matthau for sure, because he was really funky.
You've got one of the great Sinatra stories.
Oh, yeah.
He was shooting a movie in Hawaii while you were there.
Yes, he was. None But the Brave.
While you're there with Frank, he makes a call to Washington.
That's right. I got a real good dose of Frank's power and influence in this country, or this world. And he says, excuse me a minute, Hugh. And he called the Pentagon and spoke with somebody there by the first name and said, we're shooting a scene over here. It would be nice if the 10th Fleet could just kind of ease by here about noon tomorrow. And I thought he was joking. And sure enough, about 11:30 the next day, here comes battleships, aircraft carriers, cruisers, PT boats and everything. It's amazing. We came back and we recorded Fly Me to the Moon and all those things in Los Angeles. And we got a call one day that he said that Buzz Aldrin, or one of the astronauts, told him that our record of that was the first music ever played on the moon when they first landed on the moon.
Fly me to the moon. Let me play among the stars and let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words, hold my hand. In other words, baby, kiss me.
And you did a lot of television. You did Ironside, Sanford and Son, Cosby, Roots.
That's right. I did all of Cosby's bombs. I loved it, too. He gave me the freedom to do free farm scoring, which not many people out there, it scared him to death. But Cosby has that kind of spontaneity, and he has a real incredible jazz understanding of it. He really gets it. So one session I was recording, and I heard all of this noise in the earphones. I couldn't figure it out, you know, and it was Cosby back in the session with a bassoon trying to play Coltrane. You know, because Cosby's fearless. He knows musicians and loves it so well. He knows just how they stand, how Lester Young used to stand, how he picks his reed. He ended up with a cowbell, and that's how Hickey Bird came into life. He sang Hula.
Then it was time to do a musical, so you did The Wiz. Did that hook you up with Michael Jackson?
Yes. The Wiz, I was resisting at first, and Sidney Lumet, who I'd done 6 movies with, broke my resistance down when he said, "You owe me one." I owed him more than one. So we went ahead and did it, and when we started pre-recording, Michael Jackson said he was getting ready to do his first solo album on Epic, and would I help him find a producer? I said, "Michael, not now. Let's get this pre-recording done. I've got Nipsey and Pryor and Lena Horne and Diane and all these people to do pre-records with. And you don't even have a song, Michael, so I got to get a song for you. And there's a Scarecrow, you don't even have a song." So they added You Can't Win. And I watched him and saw how meticulous he was and how disciplined he was, and he knew everybody's parts, every word of dialogue, every dance step, every song. And I saw another kind of depth in Michael that was not obvious in his, you know, beautiful but bubblegum music that he was doing at Motown. And I said to him one day, "You got your producer, I'd like to take a shot."
And your grandchildren's grandchildren will be getting royalties from Thriller.
That's for sure.
Then you go into your mogul period, and you're doing hip-hop. That brings you all the way up to today. I think the only thing left for you is an opera. Have you done an opera?
Oh, I'm going to do that. Street opera.
Street opera.
Composer, arranger, and producer Quincy Jones. His 50 years in the music business are documented in his new book, Q, the autobiography of Quincy Jones, and a companion CD box set. You can hear more on the website, npr.org.
Darkness falls across the land. The midnight hour is close at hand. Creatures crawl in search of blood to terrorize your neighborhood.